What's going on, everybody? Welcome to Pillow Talk with Paul Gonneau. My guest today is the very funny comedian, Kenley Koo.
Hi. I said that last name, right? Funny.
I would say you are. How long have
you
been?
You're the only person who's ever been like, did I get your last name right? I'm like, it's one syllable.
I butcher names of like people I've known for like 10 years. And maybe that's because I don't say their last name or like a certain, I usually maybe have a nickname or something like that. So I just wanted to make sure. I feel like my mind goes straight to Q, and we've had this discussion, and you're just, no, Koo. Koo?
Yeah, Koo.
Koo.
But I'm just like, I have the one ethnic name that I like literally don't see how you could like mispronounce on like any other ethnic name.
Yeah.
But here we are.
It's pretty straightforward, but I'm the worst.
No, it's fine. I should change my name to Kenley Q. That would be better. Like the like Q Lazarus. Like that should be that.
Okay. I like it though.
Thank you.
How long have you been doing comedy as of right now?
Just over 6 months, I think.
All right.
Brand new.
Hell yeah, you feel like a little weird when I say very funny, but man, I would, you won Laugh-A-Teria.
I had a really fun time at Laugh-A-Teria.
That was a good time.
That was a very good time.
That was a good time. Your friends were awesome too.
Yeah. I did not even expect my friends to show up. Like truly, we were just like 5 minutes before, and they just like, my old friends from like university, I hadn't seen them in years, and I was like, fuck? Like,
I can bust out all the hits.
Let's go.
I don't know how many hits you got after 6 months, but like, you know, when people that, yeah. Like, it's funny because I have a whole bunch of new material that I've been working on.
Yeah.
But I know for a fact that like a bunch of people that haven't seen me perform are going to be coming to the next monthly show,
yeah.
Or the monthly show's next show. And so I'm like, oh man, like for the people that haven't seen me, I want to do like, the fucking bangers, you know, the ones that I know are gonna hit, but like,
yeah.
For the people that have like seen all my shit, it's like you gotta try to find the balance, you know what I mean? Do you struggle with that?
Almost in like an inverse way. I feel like I cycle through material really quickly.
Okay.
Like I've
that's a good
I've done 20 I did 20 like about a month and a half ago, mm-hmm. And since then I've probably written at least like 7 to 10 more minutes. I just like, get so bored with stuff.
Okay.
Like the minute I know something works, I'm just over it. I don't want to do it anymore. It's not fun.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. Like I feel like there's really only like a period of like maybe like 2 weeks where I was like, I have my type 5 ready. Let's go. And now I'm just like truly. Let me just like talk my shit. I don't.
Yeah.
I'm having this whole crisis about stand-up where I feel like the honeymoon phase is just over, and I'm now just, like, in it and trying to figure out, like, what it is that I'm, like, that I want to be doing or, how I want to, like, develop and what avenues I want to take. And it's, like, it's very strange because it matters to nobody because I'm, like, a low-level, like, local circuit comedian, and yet I'm just like so prone to putting the most pressure on myself.
It's important though. That's good.
Yeah. I'm also like not stable. I mean, I am, but like I'm like a clinically insane person
who
like is just like constantly like screaming in my own mind about like, no, it has to be better, it has to be better at like,
oh, okay, I got you.
And it's like weird because I feel like I'm learning how to like approach stuff with a different mentality. Like, I was raised in, like, dance, and, like, I did ballet and all that.
Gotcha.
And I feel like that's so, like, my mentality with stand-up is to, like, walk in and be, like, over-prepared and, like, attack and be, like, completely, like, unassailable. Is that the word? Inassailable?
Okay.
In what I'm
doing.
Sure.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. But that's kind of not... That's not fun, first of all. And second of all, it's, like, I don't think that that's the point of stand-up. There are, like, so many performers that, like, I admire who just, like, go up and just, like, talk their shit and have fun.
Mm-hmm.
And even, like, I'm working on the crowd work.
Yeah.
But it's so weird because it's, like, I want to walk in and be, like, today I'm working on crowd work. But that's not how that goes. You just, like, say whatever comes to mind and, like, pray that it's funny.
I feel like I've actually seen that approach before, though.
Yeah,
you like, know, it's, like at like some sort of some like booked open mics where people will do their stuff, and it's like I have here. It says like they'll bring up a pad and be like, right here it says crowd work, you know, and they kind of I can't remember who it was, but I mean, fucking try it. It could be funny that you know in itself. Crowd work is an uphill battle.
Yeah.
You know? And as I'm doing more crowd work also, it's fucking with, like, my set times and, like, also...
That's the thing, too. I get so paranoid about running late.
Mm-hmm.
I always want to be, like, right on that mark and, like, make sure that I'm finishing up on time, respecting the room. And the minute I derail, I'm just like, oh, shit, in, like, 2 minutes, I'm going to, like, get stuck in the middle of a bit that I, like, didn't want to close on, and I'm just going to close on it and commit and, like, be bummed about it.
I feel like it's a lot easier to, like, sometimes I just don't pay attention. I'm not trying to be a dick. Like, I've, most recently I would say I did Harv show. I think I went over, like, 2 minutes, and, like, I just wasn't paying attention. Like, I was talking to people in the crowd and just wasn't paying attention. It's easier to do that when you're doing well versus, like, when I'm bombing.
Oh, when you're bombing, just, like, give me the fuck out here. Like, oh, I'm 4 minutes? It.
Is that the first light or second light? It'd be, like, first light. I'm like, ah, that's the second light. I'm out of here, you know? Like,
I mean, that's something I've had to learn because I, like, am co-hosting and co-producing my own show.
Mm-hmm.
Which
is called?
Stressed Girlies. It's at Bar Cathedral. It is...
Great venue.
Great venue. We love it. Presently a monthly.
Awesome.
Hope we'll get invited back. This will not come out by the time we do our September show. Hopefully it will come out by the time we do our October show. Please come, wink, wink. But, yeah, I feel like in producing our own show, I've had to learn, like, okay, have, like, a 20-minute buffer period where nothing, that is just unaccounted for.
Mm-hmm.
Just so that, because, like, people will inevitably run late by, like, 30 seconds. It just happens, and, like, people get carried away. You know, if we get carried away doing our little hosty things between sets. And also, like, something stupid might happen. We'll probably start late because, like, somebody's boyfriend isn't there and we have to be like, okay.
They usually... I can't remember the last comedy show I went to that started on time.
Yeah, no. Honestly. That's... no.
Yeah, it's very rare.
Yeah.
But that's awesome. I want to definitely get on that show at some point. But I want to have you also on the monthly show. I've been having a lot of trouble with venues with that show. Bar Cathedral is actually one that's just on my list of a place that I'd like to do it. So that's a pretty good score for, you know, your first show.
Yeah, it's a really fun venue. It definitely, I think, just the setup of the room, it makes people very attentive and excited to be there. Like, Bar Cathedral has an energy that's very, like, this is an event.
Yeah.
You're at a stage, performance. Like, yes, you're excited to be here. You're hyped. Yeah. It's not just, like, and no shade to, like, other, you know, bars and other comedy venues, but it's not just, like, okay, I guess this is the plans for the evening. It's, like, maybe just because it's kind of out of the way, but...
Yeah, it's a great spot.
Old Spaghetti Factory. Get some spaghetti. It's good.
I've never eaten there. It's good? Out of 10.
It's like a Cheesecake Factory situation. Whether or not it's like haute cuisine is completely irrelevant to your experience.
Mm.
You're there to like sit in a room with like too much decor. That's the goal. And Bar Cathedral it's the front room of Old Spaghetti Factory. It's a very classy space. I'd like to keep my show, thank you very much. But
it is. They have like stained glass windows and shit.
Yeah, that was real cool. They have like a whole like bayou tapestry above the bar. Not actually, but
I definitely want to start up a third one. Maybe I'll.
That'd be sick. Yeah.
And the guy who I don't know his name. I've only met him once, but he runs. He's like the sound guy, the engineer guy in the back who runs like. I don't know, they have, like, smoke machines and, like, all these funky lights and shit. And I feel like they record most of the stuff that goes on.
I believe they live stream all the shows to, like, a Twitch channel.
Okay.
Yeah, they don't necessarily save the recording.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why, like, people will come in and record separately. But,
yeah.
I think they do everything live streamed. Which, still come out to the show, because live comedy is not the same live streamed, but.
Did you do a lot of the Zoom? Speaking of that? No. Yeah, I was so. Do you just waited until. Fucking things open back up.
I mean, like, this is. I actually started stand up on a complete whim in February.
Okay, so what made you start it?
I'd always been passively interested in stand up. I'm not a stand up fan. It's never been my number one. I like a good handful of, like, famous-y stand-up comedians, but I'd always been passively interested in it. I'm, like, a sociopath whose, like, life skill is public speaking. And I'm also, like, an annoying person who says jokes in conversation. So I was like, okay, like, I'm probably not going to do well, but let me try this. I had the idea, I think, like, on a Tuesday in, like, February, right after my birthday. And I was just like, okay, my birthday present to myself this year is that I'm gonna, like, do one open mic and see how it goes. So then I was just like, let me find one, give me, like, the entirety of Wednesday to, like, write 5 minutes of jokes, and then let me just, like, do this as quickly as possible so I don't chicken out. I'm just gonna, like, sign up for a mic on Thursday and just, like, go, and, like, maybe I'll never do it again, maybe this is gonna be, like, my career, who knows. And now we're here.
Whose open mic did you do? Is that how you met Brandon? Through comedy?
Yeah.
Okay.
What was I going to say? It was, like, one of the Kensington Market ones. That was, like, really low-key. It's so funny, too, because I was, like, having, like, so much anxiety, and, like, I was, like, literally, like, on Instagram going through, like, old stories of that, like, random, like, Mexican restaurant to be like, oh, like, what's the vibe of this? Like, is it gonna be like, do I need to edit myself to, like, fit this vibe? And then I got there and I was like, oh, literally, who cares? We're, like, bumming around in a Mexican restaurant on a Thursday.
They don't even want us here.
Yeah, like, the staff is, like, actively hostile to us, and they should be. Those poor staff, but.
Oh, good for them, though, man.
Yeah. How did you start comedy?
Well, I went through a breakup.
Word.
And I was in a relationship. I was engaged. And my fiance or ex-fiance had a child. So I was living, like, stepdad life for, like, quite a while. And to be honest, we had dated a few times. Me and her. Okay. And then this, like, third time. I want to say it was a third time. But realistically, it's probably, like, the fourth or fifth time, unfortunately. But, like, to be real, the first few times weren't too serious. And we're like, all right, we're going to do this. And we moved in together. And we kind of, you know, things got real. And I was living for those two for so long that when we split up, I was like, I don't even know who I am anymore. Like, sometimes you get in those relationships and it's like, you don't do it. Like, by, like, a big amount, you kind of, like, inch your way to, like, this different version of yourself by the end of a relationship, you know?
Yeah.
And I was just kind of like, oh, man, like, I kind of, like, I don't know who I am.
Yeah.
And I was like, what do I want? What do I want? You know, like,
yeah,
I need to do something for me. And so this stand-up was just something that I've always wanted to do. I pursued music for a bit, and that was just, didn't seem realistic to me. And I can kind of bend down that road already. And stand-up was kind of like this, you know, this new thing. And I, for years, I've been, like, with my buddy Miles, like, yo, let's go do an open mic. And he moved to Ottawa, so, like, we don't see each other a lot. And then,
yeah,
I don't know, it just didn't talk about it for a bit. And when we broke up, I signed up for Second City classes.
True.
And I did two levels of stand-up. And, yeah, but I, like, after the first level, I started doing open mics, and then it just kind of, like, I didn't even do my grad class performance show for Second City because I had a concert. Like, Mike Shinoda, if you know who Mike Shinoda is from Linkin Park. You do?
I was going to say is it your dog? Your cat is literally named Chester. Yeah, I was like, that checks out. Like, vibe.
Yeah, 100%.
R.I.P. Sweet King. Like,
and so he was in town for, like, a solo album, which he doesn't do a lot of. And yeah. I was just like, oh, like, on the same night as the second, I'm sorry, guys, like, I'm already doing shows, you know, I don't really need to, this isn't gonna really, it's just gonna be another fucking 5-7 minutes or whatever I was doing, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's the thing I'm very intrigued about, as somebody who did not start in Second City, and has no idea what goes on there, excuse me, where I'm, I'm intrigued as to what that is, because to me, like, the process of doing stand-up comedy, to me, is just so, like, just go and do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like...
No, I get it.
Yeah, like, to me, like, the difficult part of stand-up is not...
You can't learn that stuff.
Yeah, like, the right? difficult part of stand-up is not doing a 5-7 minute set. That's just, like, okay, you go, and then you, like, fall on your ass, and then you listen back to what you recorded and try to pick out the best stuff, and you just kind of keep doing that until it's somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
To me, the difficult part is what I'm running into now, where I'm, like, very fortunately, like, being, like, booked and, like, feeling pressure to, like, have a brand or, like, have, like, a nice personality so people come to my show or, like, whatever. And that is, like, so exhausting to me.
Mm-hmm.
Where I'm just, like, I don't know. Just, like, tell me where to be. Can I, like, not talk to anybody, go do 7 minutes, and then go to Tim Hortons after? Because, like, I love you all, but I just, like, I'm tired. And I've met all of you. We've run out of interesting conversations.
That's so my style, too. Like, I don't hang around. Like, I don't, and it also has to do with me drinking or not lack of drinking.
Yeah.
You know? And so, like, usually I'm just, like, there for the show, and then sometimes, you know, maybe I'll leave before the, I try to stay as long as I can to most shows, but, you know, a lot of them are during the week, and I work early, so, and I take, well, you know where I am now, from fucking Toronto, so it takes a bit to get there and back, but, second city, you know, and I get it when people like, because I fully agree you can't teach funny.
Yeah.
And, like, to be honest, the second level is really just you coming in with new material every week for, like, I don't remember how many weeks, like 8 to 10 weeks or some shit like that. And just performing your set in front of, like, the people in your class and the instructor or teacher or whatever they call him. And he just kind of, like, writes down his notes. And then everyone sits around in a circle. And they kind of just kind of critique each other with him having, like, the most to say. But other people have, like, room to, like, you know, speak about what they feel about your jokes. So, like, the first level is very beneficial. Well, it was for me. Like, obviously, I knew kind of I've been into comedy for a bit. But it just kind of teaches you the fundamentals. You already have it, man. You already have it. You don't, you know, it's, you know.
I mean, like,
you know how to be funny.
That's a weird thing that I'm also running into where it's. It has been lightly explained to me, like, the science of joke writing.
Mm.
I am both simultaneously too stubborn and too lazy to learn it. So it's very funny to me, because it's, like, people will really, like, agonize about, like, how a joke is set up or structured, and, oh, is this, like, an act out? Is this, I don't know. And I'm just, like, I don't know, I just, like, tried to write whatever I thought was entertaining,
mm-hmm.
and then just, like, use the process of open micing to, like, edit it to a place that I'm proud of, put it up in, like, my book doc, and then, like, kind of do it a little bit, and then maybe I'll come up with a good idea to improve it later, try it again, like, so, and that's not to be, like, I'm not saying any of this to, like, shit on, can I swear?
Yeah,
I've sweared, like, 90,000 times.
It's totally fine.
I'm not saying this to, like, shit on, like, Second City or, like, that model of being creative. I totally see that would be helpful to a lot of people, but it's just really foreign to me.
Yeah.
And honestly,
no, and
like,
I get it too. Like, I was actually, like, butting heads with my level one. Like, I mean, you've seen some stuff I do, like some, like I had a bit that I did with Cantaloupe where I brought Cantaloupe out and gave it to people in the audience.
Delightful.
Then told them I fucked it, you know, like shit like that. And like my nuggets in the, my McDonald's nuggets
we
in
love
the KFC. There's just like things that like, they're not necessarily, like, structured how, like, you know, typical jokes are. So there was definitely some butting heads with him.
Yeah.
You know? And but don't get me wrong. I love him and I respect him. And he's, like, one of my godfathers. Like, he really helped me get to where I am, even if we don't fully agree on, you know, or like the same things, rather.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But, yeah. I mean,
I feel that.
I would love to see you in the class. Like, it's kind of like, I feel like you might have the same mindset as me, where it's like, once people kind of are like, this is how you do things, and they kind of put up these walls, like, your initial thing is to just kind of, like, fucking break the walls down, kind of. That's just what it's like, why, though?
Yeah.
Like, why?
Yeah, I understand it. This is, like, the way that I understand it, is that, like, when you grow up as a dancer, everybody does ballet.
Mm-hmm.
not everybody is going to or wants to be a professional, like, ballerina. It's just that, like, the structure of ballet and, like, the historicity of ballet are such that it just gives you a really good baseline fundamental of, like, technique that you then can go out and, like, do other styles of dance that are more interesting to you. Because ballet is just, like, a really good and extraordinarily structured place to, like, learn technique in that way that then you can go out and, like, break the rules if you want, mm-hmm. but you're still gonna, like, know, like, the biomechanics of how stuff gets done. So maybe that's, like, what that is? I think it's just weird, too, because to an earlier point, like, I've noticed a lot of my writing is getting very self-referential to what stand-up is, and I've been told to not do that. But I'm also, like, I don't know, like, I could try to, like, make observations about, like, stuff I see in the world, or, like, try to do something that I've been told, like, to do to make it, like, relatable or accessible to a non-comic audience, but that, it feels like I'm lying, because it's, like, no, like, my life is dominated by stand-up right now. I'm in a very privileged but weird position where I started doing stand-up, and then got on, like, a book circuit really, really quickly and suddenly in a way that, like, is kind of a mindfuck. So, like, that's just what's happening to my brain right now. So, like, please just let me write about this. Because, yeah. like, it's... That's just what I'm thinking. Like,
yeah.
And no. I think also, like, the... My particular, like, joys and frustrations of doing stand-up comedy, I think, are, like, relatable. My goal is to make them relatable to, like, any person. Because, like... Anytime you, like, try to put yourself out there and do something new, and anytime you're trying to make something creatively or even just make something, it's, like, it's a mindfuck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It really is. And, like, I wouldn't even say I'm a people person. It's weird. It's weird, but I don't consider myself, like, I feel like I'm generally a nice guy, but, like, I so would, like, just prefer to, like, be hanging out with my girlfriend and my pets. And, I honestly never, outside of music I felt like was different because I was with other people. And even though usually, like, I was the singer and, like, obviously nothing was ever big, but, like, it just, you know, it started in middle school. And so I guess I just kind of got a little used to that. I could close my eyes when I sing. I don't really have to wait for a reaction every whatever seconds. Like, I was, like, the kid doing presentations in class who was, like, going side to side, you know? And just, like, so at this and, like, so nervous. I hated being the center of attention, but I liked being funny. That was my thing, and that's kind of...
Yeah.
Getting comfortable on stage was a struggle. Actually, when I started, and I might have talked about this on here before, but whatever. I didn't want to grab the mic because, like, I get shaky sometimes. And sometimes it's, like, I could feel like I'm fine, but then it just happens. And, like, my hand will get shaky. So, for the longest time, I didn't grab the mic. And, like, all the people that I kind of, like, came up with, like, I would just leave it on the stand and just kind of, like, move the stand around and, like, you know, that kind of shit, right? And one day I took it off the stand and I got, like, man, it was probably, like, the biggest applause I got that night.
Oh, my God. That's
just hysterical. From taking the mic off the stand, like, all the people that I was just like, oh, he did it, you know? And it's fucking... It's a weird community. Like, I hate it sometimes. I really do. Like, frustrating things that happen on Friday that we talked about earlier. But then, like, I love it. I mostly love it, you know?
Yeah.
But it's a fucking wave of just ups and downs, I feel. For me, anyway, you know?
Yeah, it's very weird. Like I said, like, I'm running into issues just trying to, like, do the same thing over and over again, because it's, like, I fundamentally, like being on stage. I like talking to people. And I think I like the clarity that, like, going through a process of, like, I'm going to write down my thoughts and present them to you so you understand what I'm saying, because you can hear it right now. I pause a lot in my sentences, and I have a, I get cut off, like, all the time, and I'm such a people pleaser. I'm learning how to do this now, where if I get cut off in the middle of a sentence, I'm starting to learn to say, I wasn't finished, sorry, let me finish.
Yeah.
So it's really nice to be like, no, like, this is my 5 minutes, and I'm going to, like, say what it is that I want to say in a way that I'm like, yeah, like, that, I've edited this into, like, a reasonable... representation of, like, my thought, as opposed to I am struggling to find the words mid-sentence.
So coming from, a dancing background, I'm interested because, like, do you think that... Because I know, I don't want to... It's obviously not the only one, but I feel like... Like, did you ever meet any dancers that didn't have any background in traditional, whatever, traditional dancing that were, like, skilled the same way? Because that's how I feel like, you don't have to be, you don't have to have training. Same with, like, culinary, that's kind of what I do 9 to 5.
Yeah.
Where it's, like, some of the best chefs I know never went to school, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that is, oh god, that's a question that we could talk about for 2 hours. What is dance is kind of, like, the fundamental, like, me being annoying and me being a postmodernist, whatever. Like, okay, like, what do you mean by dance? And, like, yeah, like, I mean, I could watch, like, the most, you know, technically proficient ballerina in the entire world, or I could watch somebody's dad at a wedding having a really fun time. And quite frankly, I'd probably prefer to watch their dad.
Yeah.
You know, that's way more fun. But, like, I think in the dance world, insofar as, people who pursue dance professionally, no asterisk hip-hop people, which is... It's not... There's overlap, and it's different now. That's, like, kind of its own thing. Especially, like... Yeah, like, hip-hop people are even bridging that into, like, any kind of, like, street dance. I don't know if that's the best wording for that. Like, voguing, whacking, breakdancing, all that. Mm-hmm. There's definitely a lot of, like, rigor, I think, in order to be proficient in that. But, like, I don't necessarily think that the majority of those people go through kind of, like, the childhood dance industrial complex of, like, ballet, jazz, some tap, like, functional tap. Functional hip-hop, contemporary modern, where you kind of, it's just like a, like, people are like, oh, what style of dance do you do? And I'm like, that's, unless you're in hip-hop, I feel like everybody kind of grows up doing, like, just in the dance industrial complex, and then you maybe start to specialize if you become a professional dancer when you're older, which I clearly did not, thank the Lord.
Did you want to at some point, though?
Kind of. I don't think it was ever a question, because it was never going to happen for me. I was really passionate about dance. I enjoyed dancing. I didn't really like the dance world. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of in this, like, weird zone where I was in, like, kind of the pre-professional teen dancer universe. But I was, like, it was just, like, just not going to happen for me. And it was kind of obvious to everybody that I was about as good as you can get before someone would actually be like, yeah, you would actually stand a shot doing this professionally.
Mm.
So that's a weird thing to rectify now, trying to be creative as an adult, where it's like, oh, I grew up in this paradigm where it was like the question of like, oh, am I allowed to like pursue my dream? The answer was no, and I never questioned it. I was just like, yeah, of course that's not going to happen. I'm not talented enough. I'm just going to, like, enjoy doing this and try to, you know, work as hard as I can to get as good as I can. And then, like, you know, maybe there might be an alternate way that I can translate this as an adult. Like, I could have become a dance teacher or a choreographer. I did neither of those things, thank God. But that's a weird thing to navigate now. Like, especially now that I am back in, like, a very kind of structured creative world, like stand-up comedy, i.e. like High School Part 2, where I'm just trying to like, I'm trying to be like, I understand that like nobody who told me that I wasn't good enough was doing it maliciously. I think that they were trying to, like, make sure they didn't have heartbreak later on. And I think they were just trying to be, like, perfectly realistic with me.
Was it something that you decided to do? Or was, like, dancing something that was, like, pushed on you?
It was something that I decided to do. But I started, like... Okay, hi, I'm transgender. That's a whole thing. blah, blah, blah. So I obviously was, like, not a woman yet. So I started, I think, when I was, like, 10, 11. Which is, like, young for boys.
Mm.
Old for girls. And, like, I think I had taken, like, a couple dance lessons when I was, like, really, really young. And I enjoyed it, but, I kind of, like, got... I started doing, like, kind of the ballet, jazz, all that, when I was about 10. And then pretty much from that point until I graduated high school, that was just kind of, like, a big part of my world. A lot of the reason, I think, that I got kind of adopted into, like, that pre-professional track where I was, like, around people who now are, like, working dancers and, like, a girl I went to high school with and was on the dance team with is, like, one of the cheerleaders for the LA Rams and, like... Oh,
I'm crazy, yeah.
And yeah, like, all these girls I went to high school with, like, they work on cruise lines, and they're, I think, one girl's in the Rockettes, I think. I kind of got to be there, because it's, like, I worked really hard and was, like, not so terrible that I, like, couldn't, like, hold my own against them and, like, not be a complete flop in a group number.
Mm.
But it was kind of, like, okay, we need boys. Like, so I got a lot of, opportunities to kind of improve my craft and be put maybe in a class that I wasn't supposed to be in, but would, like, improve my technique tenfold because I would just have to work that much harder to catch up to people.
Yeah.
Because of gender.
Do you think, like, the way maybe that, I don't know, you are, like, structured on stage now, like, stems from the structure that you got from your dancing, maybe?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think it's,
Because everything I met, like, I can't dance. I like to have fun and move a little bit to music. Like, I mosh and stuff, but, like, I imagine, like, the practice and everything is, like, step. You gotta move the step and do the step in the right, and everything's so, like, 1, 2, 3, 4, like...
It's funny you said moshing, because, like, I grew up kind of around hardcore, and I, like, that's generally, like, hardcore, indie, all that. But I was, like, until really recently, like, I was, like, afraid to be in a mosh pit.
Oh, yeah.
I was afraid to, like, if I went out to, like, I don't know, like, I was 17, so, like, prom or whatever, and now, like, if I go out dancing, I was so afraid to, like, dance in public for forever, because I was, like, what am I doing? Like, there's not, like, room for me to be, like, I am expressing and using, like, my port de bras. Like, it's happened in the last, like, year, I want to say, since coming out of COVID, that I've just been, like, oh, the point is not to, like, do that. The point is to just move your body and do whatever you want and don't... Nobody's looking at you. Nobody cares.
Mm.
That's been, like, such a weird... I honestly miss that feeling of early stand-up when I, like, just was so not relevant to anybody, and I wasn't trying to think about whose radar am I on. I wasn't trying to be like, oh, like, who's heard this bit before? It was just like, I just want to go and meet people, laugh, and then go home.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Shoot. Well, I guess we'll get into the top five.
Yeah.
Were you able to come up with five comedians?
Yes.
You were?
Okay.
All right.
I feel like number one is, like, Maria Bamford. I know she's everybody's favorite. And for very good reason. Like, that woman is just so insanely imaginative and interesting.
Very fun.
Yeah, just, like, so off the wall, so creative. And, but she's the best. Like, she just makes me, like, laugh my ass off. She was, like, my one point of reference for, like, what a stand-up comedian was prior to doing stand-up.
Okay.
I was like, oh, yeah, like, Maria Bamford, where she's, like, weird on stage and it's really fun. And then I really like a whole bunch of, like, younger comedians who are all kind of coming out of New York. like Patty Harrison, Mitra Juhari, Julio Torres, and then like a couple like gals from the 90s, like Margaret Cho, Janeane Garofalo.
Cho's amazing.
She's great. And I love Jenny Slate
to death. Oh, I love her too. That's hot. I think she's great. Her. Yeah.
Her special where it was like half of like a documentary about her life and then half stand up. I was like, okay, great, you're interesting, but like just she has this like really unhinged bit at the end of her special about like jacking off while looking at the moon. And I remember listening to it and just being like, I understand that this is supposed to be like this is very funny, but like I just like love the imagery and the like just writing of it. Like it's so like vivid but also kind of like what's the word? Like not asinine, like abject in a way.
She's great. And I didn't even know she did stand up like when I discovered her in Parks and Rec.
Have you seen that? That's like where we all know her
from. Oh, okay, yeah. Okay, alright. Let's do albums.
Albums. Okay.
Albums.
Top 5 of all time, right?
Yeah.
Probably number 1, Wildlife by Lotus Pugh.
By?
Lotus Pugh.
Okay, okay.
They're kind of like a... I don't even know what they... Just like screamo adjacent. Lotus Pugh was like a band that kind of came up with like Defeater, Touche Amore, Pianos Become the Teeth in like 2011. Mm-hmm. About like they were really big when I was in high school. They're actually, I am missing the 10th anniversary tour of that record to do my show this weekend.
Oh, really?
The one that I host, that's fun. But yeah, that it is a kind of a concept album. It's like an album long kind of like treatise on like trauma and suffering and like trying to make sense of a world in which you feel incredibly put upon, but you also have to like be a person in the world talking and trying to relate to people who are like suffering far more than you, and how to like kind of negotiate that that interchange. I think it's a really, really beautiful record. I think sonically it's like awesome. Jordan Dreyer, that's the lead singer, I think that's his name. I mean, he just has this like incredible wail, and I think he's an amazing writer. So many of the songs feel like very like well-written short stories. And I think he's like an incredibly vivid, interesting writer. I've like jokingly called him like David Foster Wallace for like post-hardcore bros. So that's that.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I love that record.
I definitely know the name, but I don't know the band. I've heard of them, but I've never heard... I don't think I have, anyway.
Oh, okay. You maybe heard King Park from that record. You probably heard... They have another record called Somewhere at the Bottom of the River Between Vega and Altair. And there's, like, songs off there that you might know.
All right. I love long album names.
I know. It's like the Fiona Apple one, where it's like... He purposely made it like 90 words.
What album is that?
It's like,
well, when, you don't have to say the whole thing.
When the pawn hits the something, something, something.
Really, eh?
Shout out Fiona Apple.
That's awesome.
Other records. Oh my! I like prepared this in my mind. Oh, Ease by Joanna Newsom. Joanna Newsom is Andy Samberg's wife, and she is like this incredibly. She's been doing this for like ever and ever and ever. She's this incredibly talented harpist. And she also, okay, her voice sounds like a really beautiful dying cat, and she will just write these, like, 17-minute-long songs that, again, are, like, the most, like, vivid, kind of, like, fantastical, like, stories you've ever heard. Her vocabulary is, like, off the fucking wall.
Is it, like, opera kind of style singing?
No, it's...
Because it's just, like, harp and her voice.
It sounds, like, folksy.
Is it generally just the harp and her?
Instrumentation, but the harp.
Oh, okay, yeah.
The harp features, and the harp is, she plays the harp in such a fascinating way, because it's not just like glissando, like she's using polyrhythms, she just has like a lot of musicality and a lot of, she creates a lot of interesting textures.
They're wild instruments.
Yeah, the harp is insane.
Yeah.
There's like videos of her playing it live, and you're like, it's just insane to me that this woman writes like these 17-minute, like odes that feel like they were written by like Emerson or Thoreau that she sings. She knows the entire words. She just like does this. She tours this around while she's playing polyrhythms on the harp. It's mm-hmm. insane that she does mm-hmm. this. She's so talented. Ease, I think, is like from 2005. There's only 5 songs on the record, and it is so gorgeous back to front. Sprained Ankle by Julian Baker is like one of those records in my life that is like, I don't know if you know Julian Baker.
No.
She's like a singer-songwriter from Memphis. She's about my age.
How old are you?
I'm 24.
24.
She might be a little bit older than me.
Okay.
She is like the most depressed person in the entire world. And this album, remember, it came out of nowhere. She was just like this random girl who uploaded this album to Bandcamp. She'd been in a couple bands before that nobody ever heard of. And it got picked up by people. And we all started listening to it. It is, again, like, she's kind of like a former addict, and she's like really Christian, but she's also like kind of like a radical, like socialist lesbian. And I think a lot of it is about her trying to like navigate those experiences, like just like pleading to God. It's really intense. I love it. And on that record, she's since kind of expanded her instrumentation, but on that record, it's literally just like her with a guitar and reverb, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so like haunting and sparse, and I love that record. Was that 3?
At least 3. Yeah, I would say 3. Yeah, I would say the 3. Yeah, it's 3.
Okay. I'm trying to think of what the other 2 answers were. Oh, Oil of Every Pearl's Unsides by Sophie.
By Sophie?
Yeah, I don't know if you know Sophie. She's like, she was a British? Yeah, British. Like producer. She kind of did like experimental like hyper pop. She famously like never sampled, and she would like literally like create every single sound you hear on that record is like created like from waveform, mm. like, from scratch. It's mm-hmm. insane. And she always was kind of doing this like, do you remember like that like really bratty pop sound from like the early 2000s?
Oh yeah, yeah,
100%. It's like that, but she takes that and she makes it like very, she makes it
when
really,
I think
really
of it,
lush.
I think of like boy bands, kind of, and like certain boy bands. I think of no, or am I kind thinking of a different
yeah.
era? Am I thinking like late, like maybe like yeah, mid
that.
Late 90s?
That or like think about like really, really like produced sounding K-pop.
Okay,
like
okay.
that. It's kind of like that, but made very kind of like full and lush, and conceptually kind of very interesting and very raw and vulnerable. She's since passed away. She passed away over a year ago. I was very, very sad when she passed away.
Great.
But that record is like really, really gorgeous. I think about it a lot. And my brain is, I don't know. When you asked me like 5 favorite records of all time, I was like, oh,
it's hard.
That depends on the day.
Okay, that's fair.
I truly, I'll tell you about a record. I think my favorite record of this year so far
mm-hmm.
is Hygiene by Drug Church.
Don't know them either. What kind of music?
They're kind of like a post-hardcore, slightly pop-punk tinged.
Really?
I'm bad with the genres.
Okay.
It's, if you know like End of Year / Self-Defense Family, they were a band forever, and then the lead singer kind of made his own, like, slightly pop-punkier, like, side project, Drug Church.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of, I think, having a more, like, accessible sound has kind of, like, refined a lot of the themes he's trying to work with about, like, self-actualization and, like, the joys and sorrows of, like, being a creative person. And I find him a very interesting writer, and I think the sound on that record is really, really good. And it's just like, it's just one of those things that just like appeals to me very
mm-hmm.
on a level that I don't fully know how to verbalize, where I'm just like, this record is just really good.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me really pleased to listen to it. I feel like, listen to Super Saturated by Drug Church. It's my favorite song of this year.
I'm definitely going to check out the album. I enjoy, like, you know, odd combinations of sounds, you know? And I just, it seems like something that would be worth checking out. I'll do mine. Gonna go Hybrid Theory by Linkin Park.
I was gonna be like, you better say Linkin Park up top.
It's 100%. And like, I don't know what it was. Maybe it came at a time where I needed it too, but just like the sounds, it's like, it's hard to explain, but like before Linkin Park, there weren't, like, it was almost frowned upon to blend genres like Linkin Park, and now how it's just done now, like, 21 Pilots, and, you know, how just these, like, fucking Drug Church, maybe not Drug Church, but I just mean, like, it's way more accepted now, like, it's almost like the standard to be, like, blended rather than be, and, like, I feel like Hybrid Theory for me, in my world, that was, like, and they had to break down a lot of barriers, I feel like, when that shit came. Because they were doing, like, metal festivals, but they have a rapper, you know? And it was they definitely paid their dues.
That's funny. I do find I don't know how old you are. I'm 24, so, like...
36.
Okay, word. I feel like people will, like, tell me about, like, the music, like, how people perceived music at a time before I was, like, a person. Mm-hmm. And I find the, like, insistence and, like, snobbery about, like, what genre something is, like, extremely funny and weird.
It's fucking weird.
It's like, who cares?
Yeah.
Who cares? Like, there's so much more to... There's so many different ways to think about music that both can and cannot be analyzed. Because it's like, I can try to verbalize what I like about something, but honestly... I just fuck with it. I don't know.
Yeah.
And it's just
And like, that's all that really matters.
Who cares? Yeah, like, why are we getting... like upset about whether or not something counts as Midwest emo. Who gives a shit? Is it good music or no? Do you like it or no?
Fucking Midwest emo. I don't even know what that is. No way.
I love American football. Oh, I should listen to that. I love American football.
Oh my god. Okay. Another band that has like just seamlessly blended like funk and punk and reggae and like heavy metal like together is Head PE. And their album Broke was the first album I got from them, so I'm gonna put that as my number two. I was really, really huge into Green Day back in the day, and their Insomniac record, like, just came at. It's hard to explain, but like, I was like fucking dealing with some court shit. And, like, was sexually abused when I was, like, very young.
Oh.
And, like, this was, like, an album that I, like, always listened to, like, on the way to, like, the courthouse. And, like, leaving the courthouse. And it was, like, get my mind off shit album. And it always...
Yeah.
And, like, Green Day's... It's long since kind of gone off my radar. Like, I'm not really into their newer stuff. But, like, that album, Insomniac, fucking solid, solid album. What else do I have there? Brand You Can Trust, which is, like, probably my favorite hip-hop album of all time by a group, La Cosa Nostra, which is actually kind of like this hip-hop supergroup, which is House of Pain. You know House of Pain? Vapor. Like, Jump Around, that song Jump Around.
Oh, yeah.
But they're, like, oh, like 90s, late 80s, like, hip-hop. And so it's all those guys, and then two other rappers that I really like, too, Ill Bill and Slane, and... yeah, there was another guy in the group who's not in there anymore. And when he was there, he, like, you know who Everlast is?
Kind of, yeah.
Okay, well, he's kind of does, like, this hip-hoppy, like, acoustic rock kind of style, you know? And the first album had him on it. It was the only album where he was, like, part of the group. And, like, so it has, like, these gangster rap songs over, like, acoustic guitar. Like, it's just a cool kind of... Like I said, like, these combinations of sounds that it's like, why do we have to fucking do it this way? Where it's... Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like, why don't you try to be innovative? And
right.
Try to blend different reference points and have fun.
Yeah.
Who gives a shit? Life is short.
That's why, like, totally, like, what you were saying about, like, you know, just not getting the styles of music. It's like, yeah, that's why that it's never really made sense. And like too, like I used to catch shit. Like I obviously I don't have my lip ring in right now. But like I've also had like I have both sides of my nose done.
Oh my God, I did
and
too.
Like my eyebrows done, but like they were like not like vertical, fucking horizontal.
Yeah.
One like almost got like pulled out, and then I had this like symmetry thing, so I just took them both out. But I had a lot of shit.
Yeah.
And then I was like listening to like a lot of like reggae and hip hop, and people were like, I don't know, it was weird to them, and it's like never been weird to. I also like, I grew up in foster homes. And, like, my foster brothers were Jamaican dudes. And one of them was from Guyana. Foster dad was Jamaican. Yeah. Like, so, like, those are very, like, you know, I was influenced from that. And it was, like, it kind of, like, early on, it felt weird to, like, just be like, oh, yeah, for sure these guys have influenced who I am. Like, for sure. Yeah, I'm a white guy, but I fucking, you know, I'm definitely influenced from what
I mean, it's
fucking
like,
they bring to the table, you know?
There's like two levels of it. It's like on a macro scale, it's like, okay, what do we mean by white? That's a whole conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also like, you had your experience. Like if people are like trying to like come at you for like describing your experience, I mean, it's like authentic to you, then like they don't know what's going on.
It's funny too, because as I'm talking about this, I remember going away to BC, and this was at a time where YouTube wasn't around. All right. And I went to BC, and Linkin Park had, like, Hybrid Theory and Reanimation, which is just basically a remix version of their first album with a couple other things. And when I came back, like, they were all... And this was kind of, like, I knew they had influenced me, but I was trying to, like, find... I was like, have I? You know, does who I am, like, influence them? And then I come back from this thing, and they're all like, yo, let me listen to those Linkin Park records. Like, they were literally fighting... For who got to listen to fucking Hybrid Theory first.
That's adorable.
It was, you know, it was a cool moment, though. And then number five is Servants in Heaven, Kings in Hell by Jedi Mind Tricks. Probably my favorite hip-hop group. Probably my favorite album of theirs. And yeah, I don't really know what to say. It's just,
hell yeah.
Yeah.
Hell yeah, fucking right.
Do you want to do... Let's do fucking desserts.
Desserts?
Was this a hard one for you? Do you have a sweet tooth?
I like desserts.
All right.
Oh, God. Okay. There is a fancy Italian restaurant downtown near my house. They have this flourless, like, chocolate tort situation.
Yeah, I do them at my work.
Yeah.
Flourless ones, too, yeah.
Yeah, they serve it with, like, a chestnut sauce.
Okay.
Okay, literally, the reason I like this is because it is, like, saltier than the Seven Seas. They put so much salt in this shit.
It's good.
Eh? So good. I don't even like chocolate that much, and I'm like, oh, like, would die for that.
I don't like dark chocolate. Like, too dark.
Really? I only like dark chocolate.
Really? I'm so, like, milk chocolate. Like, that's I what I... You don't, chocolate. Eh?
No,
okay.
Not for
okay.
Me. I love that. There is... So, I was... I'm not from there, but I was born in Hawaii.
Okay.
And I love shaved ice. Like, every time I go back, I want shaved ice. Mm-hmm. It's so good. Because it's not like a snow cone. They, like... shave the ice, so it's like a much more like appealing texture, and I love getting it with like lily koi and like li hing moi and all that, so that's really nice.
Okay.
I love, there is a, I don't like actually, this is like a fun, like being like, I don't know if I, third, second generation like immigrant things, like my grandparents were not born here, my parents were born here.
Okay.
Or in America, I'm from America, this whole thing.
Yeah.
But like, so I never know what, like, things are actually called in Chinese. I, like, know what they are, but I'm just always like, I don't know, it's that thing. It's, like, this soup that has little, like, tiny, like, little dumplings. I think it's, like, a gluten... There's, like, glutinous rice in the soup, and then it's, like, a red bean filling. I think it's called, like, tang yuan. Do you know what red bean is?
Yeah.
It has, like a red... I just, like, love red bean... I grew up with it. I feel like it's, like, my chocolate. Oh, do you know White Rabbit candies?
No.
They're, like, a Asian thing, I think. I grew up with them also. They're, like, little candies. They're, like, white. And they taste, like, condensed. I think the flavor is just, like, milk.
Okay.
It's a super specific flavor, and they're covered in, like, this edible rice paper.
Okay.
And they're also, like, really hard. You have to, like, chew on them for, like, a minute before you
eat them. Oh, yeah.
But I just... That taste is, like, to me... There used to be... Oh, I think they're shut down now. Wong's Ice Cream in the East End. They used to have a White Rabbit flavor.
Oh.
And it's, like, literally just, like, condensed milk or some shit. So, like, it's super easy to make, but I really like that.
I'm gonna look for them.
And then, honestly, like, I'm just, like, a huge slot for Dairy Queen.
What's your go-to
Score Blizzard.
Thing? Score... Oh, for Done. Sure. For sure.
That or, like, a strawberry today. Like, just a small one.
The other thing that I like to get to... Do you get, like, extra score?
Of course.
Yeah, okay.
It's the only way.
Yeah, yeah, all right. The other thing I like, too, from Dairy Queen is the Peanut Buster Parfaits. But, like, the ones around here don't fucking have it, y'all. Like, only certain ones have it.
Yeah.
Like, why? You have all the stuff. Every place has the stuff.
I actually don't... Okay, the part of the world... I'm from Southern California. That's where I grew up. There's, like, not Boku Dairy Queens around. I grew up, like, a 5-minute drive from, like, the only Dairy Queen for what must have been miles. There was just one randomly next to our house. So we, like... My dad would, like, take us, like, oh, first day of school, we're gonna go get Dairy Queen. So, like, I don't know, like, I don't have, like, an imprint in my mind of what the Dairy Queen menu is, the way that, like, you just, like, do for, like, McDonald's or something. Or the way that I, like, do for A&W now. I fucking love A&W. When I moved to this country, I was like, oh my god, like, A&W's the one. That's why I want to live here. Like,
yeah.
A&W's the one, but, fuck In-N-Out.
But they don't have ice cream, though. You can't get ice cream at A&W.
The frozen root beer is enough.
Oh, you like that, eh? Yeah, that's okay. Good. That's all right.
I just alienated every single Californian. But, like, fuck In-N-Out. It ain't shit.
Never had it, so I can't really say.
Actually, it's fine. You have to, like, know the super custom order, though.
Okay.
Like, if you just ordered, like, garden variety, like, menu In-N-Out, it's, like, mid. You have to know to, like, oh, like, order your patty, like, fucking, like, mustard fried and get the animal fries.
Okay.
There's just so much lore to In-N-Out that it's just kind of exhausting.
That's how I feel about White Castle, too, is, like, certain things, like, I don't know. And I hear from, there's so many things I haven't tried, though.
Are we still recording?
I would definitely, yeah, you know what?
Oh, okay.
At least half the people are like, oh, yo, I don't think it's recording.
Oh, anymore. No, I was just like, oh.
No, it is. It's working.
Okay.
All right, so, was that 5?
I think it was 5.
Okay.
What are your desserts?
All right, I'm going apple crisp.
I don't like baked apples.
You don't, eh?
I respect it. Like, if I have, like, a baked fruit pie, I need so much vanilla ice cream on top.
Well, I mean, to be real, I would never have an apple crisp without, like, ice cream.
True.
Like, very rare with that. Like, only if I, like, ran out of ice cream.
True,
if I didn't have. But if I know I'm gonna make one, I'm for sure gonna fucking get some ice cream. Carrot cake.
Slap.
Yeah?
Slaps.
Cheesecake.
I feel like cheesecake I always want... Sorry, I'm commenting on your answer.
No, it's fine. Me to shut it's up. Totally fine.
I feel like cheesecake I always want one bite of cheesecake.
Yeah?
I want...
Yeah.
And then I'm like, okay, we're good.
It's pretty filling. You know, actually, yeah. The only one that I feel like isn't filling is those... The Japanese cheesecakes.
Oh, yeah.
Tetsu. What's
Uncle Tetsu.
Thank you.
Have you ever had a Basque cheesecake?
I don't know what that is.
It's like a similar concept where it's like... It's not like, oh, here is, like, a cheese mound with, like, graham cracker crust. It's, like, kind of its, like, own contained baked thing.
Mm.
But the point of it is that you, like, burn the outside, like, to shit.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just, like, get this, like, amazing... It's, like, really kind of, like, light and airy, like, a Japanese cheesecake
What's
on the inside. But it has that, like, charred, like, a Basque cheesecake.
Basque cheesecake?
Like the people in Spain, like the Basque people.
Yeah. All right. I'm interested. I would definitely
I'm gonna get canceled by Basque people for those...
Creme brulee.
Slap.
Love that shit. I like, we do them at my work, and like, my excuse every day I like make them, and then they like sit overnight, and I always have to come in and like try one. Like, always.
Oh, absolutely.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like, I mean, most of the time it doesn't have the sugar, but the sugar on top just adds like,
no,
it's
honestly,
just perfect.
Like, just anglaise on its own is like.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm gonna go. And I feel like this fits. I was worried if this wasn't like a dessert, but you did a candy. I feel like it fits. Oatmeal raisin cookie, yo. I'm an old person.
That's a dessert.
Yeah?
You bake it.
It's easily my favorite cookie of all time. I could... If I bake them, they're generally gone by like the next day.
Sure. You must be like, you must like, you must have like loved like every like 8th grade like event, because you know, like they would bring like the Costco cookies.
No one wanted the oatmeal.
Yeah, and like all the chocolate chips gone in like a millisecond, and you're just like chilling with the oatmeal raisin.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, and really? I don't even really like raisins. I only like them in the cookies. You know, maybe butter tarts. You know, maybe. Yeah. But if I get butter tarts, I generally will get like pecan or some sort of nut or some shit. You
actually,
know?
My boyfriend is like a baker.
Oh, he
like,
is.
He's a home baker. He's really into it though.
Yeah.
He's really good. Sorry, I didn't say it. Actually, he's been really into making these like Belgian buns.
Yeah,
they're
yeah.
English buns, but they're yeah. like, called Belgian buns. And it's just like a bun with like a really tart lemon curd, and like rum raisins.
Okay.
And the raisins hit.
Yeah.
The raisins hit.
All right. Tell him to check out a show called The Bear.
We'll do that.
Yeah, it's on Disney Plus. It's okay. Like the fucking best fucking cook, and the. I'm saying this because, like, the baker in it, like, he's super passionate and, like...
Yeah.
He's always, like, trying to be rushed and he's like, no. You know, I feel like anybody that is into food or into cooking or baking needs to watch this show. It's so good. It's slept on.
Yeah.
The Bear.
I'll look into that. I like baking, too.
You do?
Yeah.
What do you... What's, like, your go-to thing? What's, like, the thing you do the best?
Financier.
Right.
Because it's, like, it... Financiers, they look really fancy. Everyone's like, oh my god. And I'm like, literally, this is the easiest shit in the world. Like, the hardest part is browning butter. Everything else you just throw in the oven. But they taste really good. They're like, so buttery and delicious. We don't live together, and I don't really have room in my apartment to, like, bake. But together, we've, like, tried to do, like, very kind of complex layer cakes. And we had, like, a whole patisserie moment once where we, like, made, like, opera... Like, the opera patisserie. Oh, it took us, like, 2 days, and we were like, what the fuck is this? And we, like, had it, and we were like, wow, like, this is good, but, like, cause it's, like, super intense coffee and chocolate. And when you're, like, making
you
it...
Like it?
When you're making it at home, not in, like, an industrial setting, first of all, they came out, like, massive. They're supposed to be, like, this big, and we, like, they were, like, huge. And we were just like, okay, let's crank up the coffee flavor, because we're insane people. And
yeah.
we were like... This is delicious. We can't have more than one bite of this because it's so intense.
Got you. All right, let's do... Wait, was that... Yeah, that was 5 for me. Let's do directors.
Oh, yes. David Lynch. I'm sure you've seen David Lynch movies.
Yeah. There's of your thing, I feel like I only know 2 of them.
Oh, I forgot what I even said. Okay. I know I said David Lynch. Wong Kar Wai, if you've ever seen, like, Chungking Express, which is my favorite movie, In the Mood for Love, Happy Together, he's done, like, 90 different things. He's from Hong Kong. He is just so... God, like, the visuals he creates are just, like, so beyond stunning. It looks like... Do you know how, like, every music video in the 90s had that, like, kind of, like, over, like, way too much, like, with the color grading and, like,
too
much with the Dutch angles? It's like that, but, like, it's so, like, I think he really portrays the environments that he's in. Like, a lot of his films are, like, kind of set in, like, 90s Hong Kong, Happy Together set in Argentina. He really kind of, like, uses that kind of, like, maximalist approach to cinematography, and his cinematographer is a guy named Christopher Doyle, who's also awesome, to really, like, present these, like, really, like, vivid environments, and, I like that, like, his movies are not, like, very plot-driven. They're just kind of very, like, explorations of, like, human
relationships.
This is
what's going on.
They're meandering and really beautiful.
Period of time.
Yeah, I just really enjoy it.
Yeah.
I guess on that, A Peach Upong Wirasethakul, who is Thai. I have not seen Memoria, so if you're in A Peach Upong head, I have not seen his new stuff, or, like, his super newest film. But, he's a Thai director, he's very, like, slow. Like, similar to, like, Wong Kar-wai, like, his... these movies just very like they're very they linger a lot. Mm-hmm. They're very like just set in an environment that characters kind of meander through, and it's about kind of that relationship. There is a shot in Cemetery Splendor, which is one of his movies, that's literally just like 2 minutes of like escalators, like empty escalators, and it is like the most like beautiful hypnotic thing I've ever seen. Mm. The back half of Tropical Malady is just like this beautiful, insane, just like trek through the jungle that just like ends with like a shot of a tiger like head on that just like made me like cry on a plane when I watched it.
Okay.
Cry on a plane, you just that memory sticks out, eh?
I'm very emotional. Do you know Neil Breen?
Yeah, yeah.
I fucking love Neil Breen. That it's man funny. Is unhinged. It's so funny.
Zakai is I'm almost certain is the person who introduced me to him.
I love, of course. Because like me and Zakai are literally best friends. And I love that we both didn't know that we like Neil Breen.
You can't, that's hilarious that you, yeah. Okay.
I love Neil Breen so much. Yeah. Just like, I just love, it's not that like, he's like earnestly inept. It's that like, there's like this like childlike imagination and just like pure sincerity to everything that he does. That like, yes, like it's like so, it's so completely like inept and bad, but it's just like, you watch his movie and you're like, but I see what you were going for. Like, and you're just like, I feel like once you watch one and you just get accustomed to like what the Neil Breen universe is, you just like watch it as like almost like a piece of like outsider art that's like more affecting than like anything anyone else could make. Cause it's just like, yeah, like I want to watch this like really bizarre 60-year-old man from like Las Vegas who has no idea how to use a camera or like to write a scene that sounds like people talking at all, but he's really earnestly trying to tell a story about climate change. I love him so much. That was 4. I forgot who the 5th one.
I feel like that was 4 or 5.
I mean, like,
you can name another one if it's...
Probably Kieslowski, who did, like, the Decalogue. He's, like, Polish, but he goes back and forth between, like, Poland and France.
Okay.
In his career. So he's famous for, like, the Decalogue, which is in Poland. It's, like, 10 short films that are all kind of, like, an ironic interpretation of each of the 10 commandments.
Mm.
And then he has the Three Colors trilogy, which is, like, the thing he's best known for, which are, like, 3 full-length films. That are each based on, they're like interconnected in ways, and they're each kind of based on like a thematic exploration of like the like tricolor of France, which is just represent like liberty, equality, brotherhood.
Okay.
And like trying to like create commentaries on that. I think he's very thematically kind of focused on like dramatic irony and coincidence and like the magic of human connection that happens within that. So that's why I like him.
All right.
Yeah. What are your favorite directors?
Okay, I'm going to go Christopher Nolan, Kevin Smith, Chris Columbus, who is the Home Alone guy. He's there because Home Alone, they're like my favorite movies of all time. 1 and 2. So I know he's done some other stuff that I like, but I can't think of it offhand. Zack Snyder, who's I'm a big comic book guy, and I'm like super more I like DC a lot more than Marvel. Marvel's all right, but Zack Snyder, I just think what he's done. He's also one of those guys who's like, I mean, just like extended. We're gonna look at the sky a little bit, you know. We're gonna have he has three-hour movies, you know? Like, where that's just, like, standard for him, you know?
Yeah.
And then I'm going Judd Apatow, simply because, again, I want to watch that show Love, but I haven't, and I don't really know what his most recent thing was, but it just, he had such a string of just hilarious movies, just some of them within the same year. He had, like, a good run, like, 4 or 5 year run. But, yeah.
guess we can finish on superheroes.
No, I love that.
I won't do superheroes because I've done them before, but...
Okay. It's funny you mentioned Zack Snyder because I know nothing about superheroes. Mm-hmm. It is the one... peace and love to all... it is, like, just the one cultural phenomenon that I just am so, like, I have no idea why we're doing this. Peace and love, I don't get it.
Yeah, okay.
So, when you texted me this and you're like, okay, you can list anybody, I was like, alright. So it's mostly musicians that I just, like, couldn't fit into, like...
That's fine. I've had, yeah.
We could probably, have to be,
like,
yeah.
Batman or that kind of stuff, you know?
I want to say my first choice, and we might just have to talk about that for, like, 20 minutes. Courtney Love. I'm obsessed with Courtney Love. I'm also going to say Yoko Ono.
Okay.
Because I feel like the both of them are extraordinarily interesting women to me in our culture, who I think raise questions about what it means to, like, be a complicated woman in the public eye who does not behave in ways that are expected of you, especially, like, in grief, who seem confident and capable in their own careers. I respect both of them as artists, like, so much. Like, if you'd given me a 6th album, I probably would have said Live Through This by Hole.
Okay.
And I think that they are both... Honestly, and I love how abrasive Courtney Love is. And it's funny, because, like, if you actually, like, look into kind of who she is as a person, it's like, yeah, like, she seems like kind of a cunt. Can I say that?
Yeah.
You can say that.
You can say cunt.
But it's like, she's like, very self-possessed, and I like, appreciate that she's so confidently unhinged. Mm-hmm. And I find both of them interesting in the sense that both of their kind of husbands both existed in the public consciousness as, like, sweet little princes of society who, like kind of, like, sensitive, troubled men who it seems like the public consciousness just decided was, like, a sweet, perfect angel who could, like, never... that we, like, must protect, and, like, this is the national treasure. Mm. Oh, and here they're kind of, like, abrasive wives who don't come across as particularly, like, doting. And, like, fuck them. Let's spend, like, 20 years, like, saying the most, like, awful things we can about them. Mm. Making up shit about them in the press. Calling them all sorts of names when really, like, especially, like, both Courtney Love and Yoko Ono were both very interesting and accomplished artists. Yoko more so than Courtney, but, like, interesting and accomplished artists in their own right before they ever linked up to mm-hmm. Cobain and Lennon, respectively. And I think, like, fundamentally, both of those women exist in my mind as proof that, like, people can, like, say the most horrible things about you. You can be so wildly misunderstood by the world, and you can be somebody who the world is not of this world and is, like, very put upon, but that does not stop you from, like, continuing to be creative and to be yourself and to, like, again, just, like, have a creative output that is true to yourself, because both of those women have, like, kept... If I was in either of those positions, I would just be like, you know what, like, I'm just gonna go, like, chill and, like, not ever put my face out in the world again. Mm. It's just too much, goodbye. But they've just kept being like, no, like, I'm just going to continue to make the things that are interesting to me and exist in public in a way that is authentic to me. Mm-hmm. And, like, yeah, like, I'm, like, you know, it's like Courtney Love, it's like, sorry that she wasn't, like, a weeping, just, like, on the floor, like, flaming June mess all the time, but, like, she has other things she would like to talk about that are not just, like, her husband's death. She mm-hmm. has other things going on with her life, and she's not... Anyways, I love both those women.
Okay.
I could talk about them for a while. I really like Michelle Zauner, who's the front woman of Japanese Breakfast. She also published Crying in H Mart, which everybody should read. It's a very good memoir. She's very interesting to me as being also like an Asian American creative woman, I think that she kind of is such a champion in a way that's not just like pure representation politics.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's a champion not only in just like being that Asian American woman, but being somebody who is like in her work trying to like grapple with those themes of the diaspora and culture and what belongs to who. Also, she's a really good writer, so. I don't remember my other two. Who are your heroes?
Oh, man, I've done them quick. If you really want to know, I'll go
through them
quick.
I would like to know.
They're all superheroes. They're all, like, comic book. Like, I collect comic books and shit. Batman, Ninja Turtles... Red Hood, who is like, he used to be a Robin, but then he kind of left and he became his own thing. And then Arsenal and Spider-Man.
Huge.
Yeah. And if I was doing a real person, I'd probably pick my Nana.
Love. May I ask why?
She was basically my mom. Like I said, I was like raised in foster homes and stuff. Yeah. My Nana was like my guardian sometimes. It was like this weird thing. I lived with her for like a bit throughout my childhood and stuff. And she just... did all the things that, you know, a mom should do. I guess that's it.
That's so nice.
Yeah, she was awesome. She's fucking, as much as she would hate this tattoo on my neck, it's a pretty big representation of what she meant to me. Like, actually, and I got it done, like, by no means, like, my Nana was a nurse, so she had some money, but she wasn't, like, well off, you know, and... Mm-hmm. She retired and moved to BC, and when she passed away, she left me $300, and I got this, you know? And, yeah, like, she was religious. I'm not very religious, but this symbol is also, like, you know...
It's the Trinity, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really cozy. This is kind of something that, like, I like to look in a mirror at once in a while, and it's kind of, like, as corny as it sounds, this was the whole reason I got it. It was kind of like she was looking back at me a little bit. Do you know what I mean? And so the symbol, so the Trinity symbol, you know what that is, the Trinity, and then the clouds kind of represent, it actually took her death to kind of make me turn my life around. When I was just like doing drugs, selling drugs, and just doing, you know, all the bad shit.
Yeah.
And yeah, so like the sun rays just kind of represent like the new me kind of breaking through, and the storm clouds are like the old me. So it's a very... you know, meaningful. It's a tattoo that means a lot to me. It may not be, like, the fanciest artwork, like my fucking hands or something, but
it's very cozy.
I doubt I'll have a more meaningful tattoo in my life. No, yeah. It doesn't matter how good the art is. Like, it's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it doesn't look bad, so who cares?
Thanks.
It doesn't look bad. I have some bad tattoos. We're not going to go into that, but I have to go to a show soon, but...
Right, you take one, I'll take one.
Okay.
And then we'll get out of here.
Is this like a Trivial Pursuit? Are the like, colors really relevant?
Sometimes they can get... Now the colors mean nothing. Alright. Do you enjoy camping? Any favorite memories?
Of camping or in general?
Yes, camping.
I have not camped as an adult. I might enjoy it now. I viscerally hated camping growing up. I have like a very distinct memory about having to go on like a group camping trip with like a couple other families I grew up with in Joshua Tree growing up, in like the desert. And I just remember like being so miserable the entire time and like just staying in the little tent we had and just like reading a book.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remember also that like one night my dad's friend and his son broke into our car to sleep in our car and eat all the power bars we had in our glove compartment. So I remember that.
A fucking power bars.
Do you enjoy the camping?
You know, I feel like I'm the opposite. I used to as a kid, and then at some point I became homeless, and then like camping was just, I tried to enjoy it with my ex and her daughter, but like the last 3 or 4 times I've been camping, like, some shit just happened. Like, nothing. True. Not, like, drama or anything. Like, one time it, like, rained. The whole tent flooded. One time we forgot our air mattress. Like, there was a whole bunch of shit. Like, where it's just, like, every... And I'm just over camping.
That's, you know, fair enough.
Yeah. All right, what you got?
Okay. Who brings out the best in you? How?
My 100% my girlfriend, because I feel like she believes in me more than I believe in myself. Yeah. Straight up, you know? And sometimes, like, there's so many times I could do, but like, one time when I was starting up, like, my first show, I was, like, just looking at paying someone to do, and this is very small, like, she's helped me in, like, personal ways and just other ways, but this is what I want to just kind of say to paint the picture. She was just, you know, basically like, oh, well, what do you have to do? Like, what's your kind of idea? I literally have like a bunch of papers where I drew out like what I wanted the poster to look like and how I kind of wanted this poster format to kind of be. Not exactly what but if you look at my two posters that I have for both my shows, they're very similar. You know, they have very similar elements. And so I was just kind of, she's like, you can fuck do that. I don't know anything about graphic design. I didn't really know anything about like editing the podcast, but I kind of picked that up. You know, and then she's like, no, you can do this. You have all the things you need to do this. Like, do it. And she just kind of, she pushed me to do something that I totally would never have done on my own.
Yeah.
You know, and now I'm like, I have a lot of fun doing it. And I think, you know, the end result was really good. And yeah, I mean, it's important to have, you know, good people in your corner. Yeah. Regardless of whether they're like your person or just your friends or whoever they are, you know?
Yeah. No, That's so, I'm happy that you have that. Because it's very hard to come by in this world.
It is, though. It is. Yeah. It really is.
I mean, my boyfriend, I think he is just one of those people who is violently himself.
Mm-hmm.
He just, like, does what as he pleases. And I don't think he's, like, ever... He's also incredibly nice and sweet and, like, very, like, well-mannered and polite. Mm-hmm. But he's just very, like, he just does whatever he wants, and it's just very refreshing. And I like being around him. I feel very, like, creatively inspired because he's just not... He just seems very unburdened by, like, other people's expectations, which is something that I kind of struggle with in my own life.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, like, my parents, who I think for the times that we disagree about stuff, and I'm like very different from my parents, just like vibe wise.
Yeah.
But I think that they challenge me to like not just be like a being of pure chaos. So I think they kind of bring out the best to me in that way.
That's good. That's good. It's nice to hear when, you know, parents do that.
Yeah.
Wish all parents were like that. My girlfriend's currently dealing with some shit. So actually, I think I can talk about this now. So like her parents, she comes from like a, you know, Muslim family, like raised in United Arab Emirates and stuff, moved here like 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so our family's fairly traditional, and they hadn't known about me for like our whole, we've been together for almost, well, like 3.5 years going on, 3.5, what, wherever, over 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
She recently told them about us, and they're just like, fucking, I mean, I feel for her, and like, yeah. I've kind of gone through this at an earlier stage in my life where I dealt with like, you know, abandonment and all the things that she's going through now, so I'm trying to, you know, help her, but I fucking just want to, like, call her parents up and be like, love this person. Like, this is the person you created. Yeah. Just fucking love them. Like, she didn't have to tell them. We've been living happily, and she wanted to invite them into our life, you know? And it's just fucked up, man. But
yeah,
I'm happy to hear that for you. Hmm. Are you good at negotiating? If so, do you enjoy... Well, I guess you can answer even if you aren't good at it, but do you enjoy it? Are you good at negotiating? Do you enjoy it?
I have no idea.
You don't know if you're good at it, or you don't know if you enjoy it?
At negotiating?
Yeah.
I don't know. I've never asked myself that question.
Okay. Is there any, like, situations where you find yourself having to negotiate anything? Like, working.
What does negotiate mean?
Like, maybe, like, working, trying to get a, dude, I don't know, a day off? Like, I don't know. Or, like, oh, someone, like, wants to sell you some shit, and you're just like, nah, I don't want that. I'll pay 30. You know,
oh, fucking, like,
you know, like.
Like, advocating for whatever. Myself. Yeah. Or, like, trying to, like, get a win-win. I feel like that's extraordinarily telling about my life that I just, like, had a cry. I was like, wait, I don't even know what that word means. People just say it, and I just, like, nod my head, and I'm like, yeah, uh-huh. And then I'm like, wait, what does that mean, actually? I don't know.
Are you good at, like, getting the things you want? You seem like, I feel like, I mean, we haven't known each other that long, but I get a vibe of you very being like, this is what I want, and this is... You know?
I suppose.
Take it or leave it, kind of.
I don't think about it that much. I don't
fair.
Know. I just...
That's fair.
I will say, I've gotten a lot better at, like, sticking up for myself. And trying to, like, be... Like, emotionally... Independent. In the last couple of years. I think COVID was a nightmare for everybody. It was really bad for me.
Mm-hmm.
Mentally, it got rough, but I think coming out of COVID, it really felt like, even, like, the last couple months, even, like, I'm, like, having some, like, fun anxiety now about, like, comedy and all that, but, like, it really has felt like the clouds parted, and I'm, like, finally, like, just, like, very clear in my direction now of the last, like, year or so.
Okay.
Are you good at negotiating?
Oh, yeah, that is what the question... You know what? I'm just going to straight up say no, because if I don't get what I want, I tend to just be like, I'm good. And I don't really... Like, I put my offer out, but then if it's like... if someone... Oh, no, that... Like, if someone tries to negotiate with me, I'm just like, oh, no, like, I don't care enough to do this. You know? Like,
yeah.
Most of the time. So I would say I'm not good at it, because I don't do it, you know?
I guess.
Like, I don't care enough to do it most of the time. So I would say no. I feel like some people, they, like, go places and they're like, oh, I'm gonna get... Like, some people are just good at that shit, like...
I don't have, like, haggling brains.
Yeah, like, some
I'm so,
yeah.
Like, it's so, like, I feel like I'm ashamed to my, like, culture, because I just, like... the haggling, I'm just like, I really don't care. Like, I'm either gonna buy it or not.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not gonna, like... try to do, like, the mental math of, like, what I can reasonably get this for. I'm asking you, okay.
Yeah, last one.
When or where do you have your best ideas?
In the fucking shower.
Huge.
Most of the time, and it's brutal because, like, you can't, like, what do you do? I always try to remember. Sometimes, man, honestly, I just fucking grab my phone and I just will, like, write it with, like, my hands outside the shower. I try to dry my hands off and use the phone.
Oh my god, huge.
But, like, if I don't, it's usually gone by the time I get out of the shower. So, like, if I have something really good, I have to write it down, like, quick.
Huge.
You know? And the shower, I don't know why it comes to me in the shower. I have no... Maybe it's just, the time of day that I'm showering. You know, maybe it's after work, after... And I'm just, you know, going over the events of the day, or I don't know what it is, but the shower.
Yeah. That's so funny. I feel like the shower is a cursed zone for me.
Yeah?
I never have good ideas in the shower.
No way.
Anytime I think of a bit in the shower to, like, try and stand up, it's always like...
oh, this is a shower bit. It's not gonna fucking work.
I just know. I try and it's like, yeah, that was not a hit. That was not the one. I feel like every bad life decision I've ever made came from me being in the shower. Just, like, being manic on my own.
I haven't showered for a week. Things are going great.
Yeah. No, I feel like that's interesting because it's, like, the opposite for me. I have my best ideas when I'm talking to other people.
Okay.
Or when I'm, like... Because I almost feel like with my brain, I need to, like... Which is frustrating because I don't like being around people all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not the most, like, verbal or, like, social, but I think I'm, like, fundamentally an extrovert in that way. Where, like... I just implode if I'm by myself. It's like, I feel like I just need to be, like, out in the world and, like, not being given the time to, like, overthink or overanalyze.
Gotcha.
To just, like, go and do it and make a decision on the fly and just, like, trust that my instinct is good. Like, that's why even, like, going back to way earlier in this conversation, like, when I was, like, I went for a stand-up, I was like, we have to do it now.
Mm-hmm.
I have to go up at the next possible opportunity. Or it's not happening. Because mm-hmm. I will overthink it and overanalyze and, like, overprepare and then never do it. Yeah.
All right. I guess we'll get out of here.
Yeah.
You can tell these people know where to get at you if you want.
Yeah. If you enjoyed hearing me ramble, I'm on Instagram at Normal Canadian Woman. I'm trying to have a Twitter account again. I'm not into it. I might delete it by the time this is up, but it's at Kenley Koo. Oh, make sure that you spell my name correctly, because nobody can spell my name correctly. I think you actually got it right on the poster for Laughateria.
Yeah.
I'm like confused as to why people spell my name wrong. It's not that hard. Anyways, K-E-N-L-E-Y-K-U, Kenley Koo. And then you can always follow my Instagram to see show updates. I never know what I'm doing. Yeah, in summary, I don't know what I'm doing. Lovely meeting you all.
Follower, go get tickets to Stress Girlies.
Do it. It's a very fun time. Yeah, really awesome female forward show, but with like other genders too. Great time with my co-host Monica. We chill at Bar Cathedral. Come out. They have good popcorn chicken.
Popcorn chicken.
It slaps.
I'm going to try it next time. All right. Like always, this podcast brought to you by Neon Light District. Hit them up. Use code PILLOWTALK to save 10%. And by The Great North Apparel. Hit them up. Use code PILLOWTALK to save 30%. Thank you for sticking around. And I'll see you in 2 weeks, guys. Peace the fuck out.
Bye.